Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Okay, my friends, I've been waiting for this moment for a while. Because those of you that know this profession, you probably have heard of Byron Blackburn, and he is here. We want to thank our friends from Better Keno for sponsoring today's episode. How are you, Dr. Blackburn?
I'm fine. How about you, Adam?
I'm honored. You know, and I'm kind of like in starstruck mode right now because I was telling you before we recorded that I've been using your CAPC, you know, data. I've read your articles. I've read your chapters. I've seen your lectures. And to have this little one-on-one moment, I'm kind of geeking out. I'm not going to lie.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm certainly familiar with your work in DVM 360. So it's a pleasure to be here and it's an honor for me.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So, you know, to our listeners, Dr. Blackburn, he holds the appointment of Distinguished University Professor at the Auburn University's College of Veterinary Medicine. He is the past president of the American Association of Veterinary Parasitologists, the Southern Conference on Animal Parasites, or CAPC, the Southeastern Society of Parasitologists, and the Companion Animal Parasite Council is what I want to say, which is CAPC. So he is in quite a bit. He has served as an associate editor for the Journal of Parasitology and has served on the editorial boards of Veterinary Parasitology, Veterinary Therapeutics, the International Journey of Applied Research in Veterinary Medicine, the Journey of Eukaryotic Microbiology, and the Journal of American Animal Hospital Association. Dr. Blackburn is a recipient of the American Association of Veterinary Parasitologists Distinguished Veterinary Parasitologists Award, the Pfizer Award for Research Excellence, and the Auburn University Student Government Association Teacher of the Year Award, because I know the vet students love Dr. Blackburn. So to quote one of the graduates that went to Auburn, Dr. Blackburn makes parasitology cool.
That's what you want to hear from students, right?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So we're going to chat a little bit about heartworm disease too. And so, you know, to our listeners, kind of like peel back the curtain a little bit. What is the current incidence of canine heartworm disease in the U.S. and how is that trending?
Well, you know, you would have thought that heartworm would go away, wouldn't you? You know,
right.
We've got all these excellent preventives. Our diagnostic tests have improved. Certainly we've tried and successfully increased awareness. But the fact of the matter, Adam, is that no, it hasn't gone away. And the more we look, the more we find it. Now, I will tell you that the great new preventives and our new therapies have reduced the likelihood that we'll see a really severely ill patient, you know, as much as we did 30 years ago. But the more we look, the more heartworm we see. And so it's not gone away. There are reasons for that. We can discuss that along the way. But you look at the CAPC maps, you know, yeah. Ranges continue to expand. Heartworm continues to emerge as a problem in certain areas where it hasn't been a problem. We get a refocus of emergence due to a lot of things, you know, pet rehoming and climate change and changes in testing strategies. So lots of good reasons why heartworm remains dynamic and hasn't gone away, still a problem. So anything that we can do to encourage veterinarians, staff members, and students that are in training right now, no, this continues to be a problem. Yeah. Anything that we can do to intensify our focus on it and to display it in front of the practice community as a problem, I think will help us.
And the shelters too, I mean, there's such a big influx of pet adoption in the past couple of years too, that we're seeing, you know, the implications that we're seeing it in shelters, of course, and the shuffling from storms and so forth. So, you know, we're seeing it a lot in shelters as well. I know I'm in shelter medicine on the side too, and we definitely see quite a bit of it as well.
And those are your patients that are at greatest risk, less likely to be on prevention and protected, right?
Mm-hmm.
Less likely, yeah. Oftentimes, unless they're surrendered for one reason or another, to have received any proper preventive care, disease surveillance. So there you have it. You have a population of unprotected pets. Parasites are simple, Adam. Yeah. They go from infected pet to non-infected pet through the environment, sometimes through a vector, sometimes through an intermediate host other than a vector. But it's really painfully simple. You know, the solution is out there. It's just a matter of implementing it. And those unprotected pets are one of our sources, continue to be one of our sources.
Then what are some of the reasons dogs become infected with heartworm, even though FDA-approved heartworm preventive products have been prescribed by the veterinarians?
Well, it seems like an enigma, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We've got great products. Why should we have heartworm infection and disease? Well, the reality of it all is that the majority of pets remain unprotected for the entire year. You know, lots of pets get some medication some of the time. Many pets get no medication ever, you know. And so the unprotected population remains huge. And certainly that remains a source for the at-risk, I think, so-called protected pet. But let's talk about that population. Compliance, Adam, remains our number one issue. Yeah, we're dealing with some heartworm resistance, you know, in certain areas, and the products may not work quite as well as they did at one time, but that doesn't stack up at all to the problem of compliance. And what do I mean by compliance is giving medications regularly, you know, as prescribed, and covering as much as you can of a pet population in an area. That's our problem. We have the meds, you know, we have the knowledge, we understand it. It's just getting everyone in, telling them that story, convincing them with these newer agents that do more than just heartworm, that this is a true benefit to your pet. This is a necessary medication, you know. So lots of reasons, but I think just getting everyone to do it or getting a greater proportion of the people to do it, it's a daunting task.
Yeah, it is a daunting task. I want to talk more about heartworm positive dogs then. Is there any heartworm preventative product that is approved for use while treating a heartworm positive dog?
Well, I mean, that's a tricky question. Let's go back to the original introduction of the preventives. So the Pioneer products way back carried labels that say dogs must be converted to a negative status before being placed on preventive. Now, as we move from some of the Pioneer products into the newer products, the sponsoring pharmaceutical companies were getting safety studies conducted in heartworm positive dogs. So the language softened. Some of the labels say testing is recommended before administration to heartworm positive dogs, and some carry no label at all against avoidance of use in heartworm positive dogs. So dogs deserve prevention, don't they? Even if they're infected. Just because they're infected doesn't mean that they can't get reinfected, you know, or that you can't add to the burden of heartworms that they already have. So clearly, placement of dogs on prevention while they're infected, while you're deciding what to do with them, you know, is an important, I think, decision. What we've learned, and this is a bit what you're, I think, alluding to, is that we've learned that the preventives, some maybe more so than others, do have an effect on adult worms after a dog is infected. So placement of a dog on prevention not only prevents additional infections, but can have a negative effect on the existing worm burden. It's not an approved strategy. It's not something that any of the resource organizations like American Heart Society or CAPSI recommend. But we just talked about the problem we have in getting medications to this population that remains beyond our reach. So there's going to be some dogs that either clients can't afford the approved therapies to remove adult heartworms, or their existing health conditions prevents the use of those products, or they're moving somewhere else and they don't have time to comply with that entire regimen. So in those instances, sometimes placement on a preventive along with a tetracycline-like drug can have a profound impact on those existing infections. And not all the preventives are created equal when it comes to doing that.
Right.
We're learning more and more about that.
Well, that's my next question for you too, is that they're not all created equal. So there are several different macrolytic lactomolecules and formulations available for veterinary prescription for prevention of heartworm disease. What differences in these molecules and formulations should a veterinarian consider in prescribing a prevention heartworm product?
Yeah, you know, Adam, the first thing that I would tell you is that we have an excellent family of preventive products out there. All of them are very, very good. And if I were giving any veterinarian or pet owner or staff member advice, I would say, get those dogs on preventive. It's better to be on a preventive than on a specific preventive, if you know what I mean.
I like that.
So back to your original question. Yeah, I mean, we have a class of drugs. It's a big old word called macrocyclic lactones. It consists of the avermectins and milvomycins, and you know them as ivermectin, moxidectin, milvomycinoxime, selamectin. Those are our principal MLs or macrocyclic lactones. They all belong to the same group, you know, but they are either delivered differently or they have inherent properties that make them different. So the behavior of a heartworm preventive can depend on several things. Is it administered orally? Is it administered topically? Is it injected? What's the dose? What's the active ingredient? Is it one of those that I mentioned? Some have different behavioral attributes in the host. What I tell senior veterinary students is, you know, when we get done today, you're going to wish you paid more attention in that class called pharmacology that we all wish we'd have paid attention to. Because understanding why these drugs are different, some are fat loving, meaning lipophilic, you know, some stay around a long time, they have staying power. So all of these different attributes, you know, their fat loving capability, the route at which they're infected, that they're introduced, injection, topical, oral, the actual active ingredient, and then how frequently it's administered can affect greatly the amount of drug in the animal, you know, in that compartment that affects heartworm. And so some just stay around longer than others. Some achieve higher levels and bathe heartworms in developing stages and more of the preventive for a longer period of time. So it's complex. It's a difficult concept to sort of grasp and get around, but they are not all the same. Now, having said that, they are all excellent products. And obviously, I'm an advocate for getting every animal on preventive, you know, year round. But there are differences in their behavior that might lead to better efficacies in certain situations, more effective adulticidal properties if you're using them for that. They may be combined with other agents or by themselves have effect on ectoparasites or intestinal parasites. So we have, I think at this time, probably a greater mixture and choice of preventive products for heartworm that also control other parasites on and in the pet than we've ever had.
Yeah, we really have. And, you know, I think something that probably you and I have recognized, maybe, I don't know, maybe the 5-10 years, you probably have better data than I, but I've been noticing a little bit more of this resistance that we're talking about too. So we're seeing, you know, there's a current state of canine intestinal parasite resistance. So what is the current state for those approved macrolytic lactone products? And I guess our greater question too is, how do we definitively diagnose these cases?
We are seeing some emerging resistance right now. Parasite that's captured most of our attention is Ancelotti caninum. It's the canine hookworm. And there are some pretty angry isolates out there, Adam. And some of those isolates are multi-drug resistant. So they're not just resistant to the macrocyclic lactones. They're resistant to the pyrimidines like Pyrantel. They're resistant to the benzimidazoles like Finbendazole. So you're talking about Panacure and Pyrantel, which comes in a number of proprietary formulations. Nemex, you know, as veterinarians, we mostly use Strongid as horse products, you know, but so it's emerging as a problem. So the second question you asked is, so how do you spot these? Well, pretty simple, actually. When you treat and you still have positive fecals, then that should raise your sort of weather vane of what's going on. But there are ways to analyze the contents of feces and fecal examinations that will get you to a more definitive answer. And what I mean by that is because the hookworm life cycle is so complex, it involves the repopulation of the gut from extraintestinal reserves that almost all dogs have. You have to be careful that when you treat and do a follow-up fecal, that you do that follow-up fecal at the right time. If you do it too late, then you're going to be picking up that extra intestinal population that has gone to the intestine to replace all their friends that have left. That's not resistance. That's just a natural part of the life cycle. So what we say to do is to do that fecal usually within 10 to 14 days after you treat. If you see eggs, I prefer staying on the 10-day side of 10 to 14. If you still see eggs then you're likely dealing with some margin of resistance. And that's going to vary depending on the isolate and the drug. But yeah, we are seeing it. But again, not all the products that are out there exert the same effect on these resistant isolates. So it's just like heartworm.
Yeah, it really is. I do want to talk about one drug in particular, which is moxidectin. And, you know, it's found in several commercial heartworm prevention products that have different delivery systems, such as transdermal, we got parenteral, we have oral, of course. How would you characterize potential differences in pharmacokinetics, including relative blood and tissue concentrations?
Yeah, well, remember when I said earlier that there are certain drugs that are fat-loving or lipophilic, you know? So moxidectin is one of those macrocyclic lactones. It does have some fairly unique properties, some staying power, and that can be enhanced by the way you administer it and the formulation. So in the topical formulation of moxidectin, and that would be like Emoxy that you're talking about, as you administer it topically, the amount of drug that enters the plasma compartment. Now we're talking about that course that we all should have paid more attention to that I was talking about, you know,
pharmacology.
Yeah, they define all those terms like absorption, distribution, metabolism, excretion, area under the curve, half-life, right? Cmax.
PKA.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Forget about all those. Just the point here is that because of moxidectin's lipophilicity, its fat-loving properties, and because of the route of administration, topical in the Emoxy formulation, you tend to get more drug staying in the plasma compartment for a longer period of time. Most of the preventive products, when you administer them, particularly orally, they spike, and within a day or two, they're gone. Topically administered products, and this is also true for the injectable moxidectin, and that's the ProHeart series of products, but they work differently than Emoxy does. So with Emoxy, topical administration gets you that sort of increase in blood level that tends to stay in the bloodstream for a longer period of time and in the tissues, and then disappears more slowly. And then the more you administer it month by month, the more accumulates in the blood until you reach what we call, in another pharmacology term,
steady state.
There you go. Yes. And at that point, the amount of drug moxidectin entering the plasma compartment equals the amount that's leaving. So why is that important? Well, it goes back to all that area under the curve. So if you've got all of that medicine in the animal, and you're bathing all those products in more medicine, then it's quite likely going to be reflected in better efficacy. But more importantly, if you stop for some reason, and you shouldn't, but if you do, you run out of medicine.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be 2 or 3 months before you get to the veterinarian. The amount that's in the plasma compartment is going to take a little bit longer to decline, go away, and to reach the minimum level that it takes to protect against heartworm. So it's a forgiving drug. Mm. What we don't want to do is to convince the client or the veterinarian that they could administer it for a while and then stop and administer it for a while, because it's impossible to determine when you reach that level when it's not working. Besides, you've got all these other parasites that you want to control. You know, in the case of Emoxy, you've got fleas, you know, you've got intestinal parasites like roundworms, hookworms, whipworms. And so that monthly administration is very important in eliminating that intestinal parasite population. So drug matters, or active ingredient matters, and moxidectin is different. Formulation matters. Is it administered topically? And does that topical administration result in that unique PK pharmacokinetics profile that we can use to our advantage? And the answer is yes.
You know, it's fascinating because I'm thinking as a pet owner, that must, you know, they may not know it, but we know that this gives them probably better peace of mind to say, just like you said, I ran out. Shoot, I got to get more heartworm prevention too. So it kind of closes that gap, if you will, probably for pet owners, knowing that it gives them better peace of mind to know that, of course, they need to do monthly, but maybe they missed it. It's been a couple of weeks, but just talking about the pharmacodynamics that you just described, it gives me, a veterinarian, better understanding and assurance that the animal is going to be protected.
That's important. Now, it's important that we tell our listeners that all of these products are excellent products, Adam.
Right, you know? Absolutely.
And I'd rather you have a dog on a product than no product. But just keep in mind that there are differences that you can exploit and you can take advantage of. And a knowledge of those differences is very important.
Yeah, it really is. And it sounds like, so a pet parent's not really compromising parasite control if they're choosing, you know, something like Emoxy topical solution, right?
Oh, no, not at all. No. What do you mean by that? Do you mean, is Emoxy different than other products in the marketplace that are formulated similarly or comparing to other products?
Right. If they choose and like an FDA approved generic product like Emoxy.
Oh, yeah. So you're going the generic route. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about generics. You know, when you go have a prescription filled, many times you get a generic product, you know, there are advantages to generic products. Some are less expensive. They're not of inferior quality just because they're less expensive. You know, there are lots of reasons for that. But generics have to go through a very rigorous evaluative procedure to get on the market. You know, it's not like that you can just send a letter requesting your generic be approved by FDA. That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
You've got to submit, depending on the product and the available data on that product that's out there, sometimes additional information to get your formulation approved. It's not unusual for you to have to prove that your formulation is bioequivalent. It goes back to the pharmacology thing.
I know.
Yeah. So is Emoxy bioequivalent to Advantage Multi, which is the pioneer product, the first to enter the market? Mm-hmm. And the answer is that Betaconol has to prove that. They have to prove to or demonstrate efficacy or use data that's in the marketplace that convinces the regulatory agency in one way or another that this product is of equal efficacy to other products like it in the marketplace. So don't think that generics, I'm not telling you that they have to undergo the same identical testing strategies and that their data package looks identical to other products in the marketplace, but they don't get there without efficacy assessments and without review and evaluation by the Federal Food and Drug Administration before they get on the market. So never presume that a generic is inferior in any way to any other product that's out there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been fantastic, Dr. Blackburn. But wait, before you leave, I got to ask you, I mean, do you have, what's one of the parasites that you're just kind of like obsessed over? Like, do you have one that you just love to learn about?
Oh, gosh, dozens of them. You know, I tease the veterinary students. We teach them about a trematode that lives in the mesenteric vein in which the male is permanently sort of mated to the female in this eternal love affair. I said, how romantic is that? You know, so, you know, it's not that important a parasite in most regions of the country, but I mean, how would you like to spend the rest of your life? You know, it's like the old song by Ben Perry, you know? So yeah, there are things about parasites that are romantic and fascinating.
Great.
And interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. What an intimate location to choose for them too, right? Gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What a honeymoon. Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to study something like that, right?
Right. Well, Dr. Blackburn, thank you so much for your time and expertise. This has been fantastic.
You're welcome, Adam. I enjoyed it. And next time we run into each other at a meeting, make sure you grab a hold of me and say hello.
I will. Absolutely. You're hearing me screaming down the hallway.
All right.
Thank you so much. And thank you to our friends from Better Keto for sponsoring today's episode. This has been fantastic. Thank you to our listeners. Please don't forget to subscribe and comment and rate our podcast as well. It certainly helps us out. Thank you for all your hard work. And we'll see you next week on the Vet Blast podcast. Have a great week, everybody. Take care. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.